First of all, is everybody able to hear me? All right, awesome. I was having some trouble with my headphones, and I think my speakers are kind of on their way out. So hopefully the microphone is still functioning all right. For those of you who I haven't met or seen, my name is Josh. I'm based about an hour outside of Atlanta. A little bit on the later side of things, but I'm very excited to be here with everyone. And thank you to you all for being here, and thank you to Domio for allowing me to present on this precept. So we're discussing the ninth precept, which is formulated in a lot of different ways, which I'll sort of get into in a little bit. But generally, it's constructed as do not indulge in anger. So I wanted to start off. I found a quote from Robert Aitken's book, The Mind of Clover. It actually ends the chapter, but just I thought it was a useful way to sort of frame the approach to the precept and sort of probably most of the precepts. But it's from Chao Cho, and he says, Buddhahood is passion, and passion is Buddhahood. And he's in a discussion with a monk. So the monk asks, "In whom does Buddha cause passion?" And Chao Cho answers, "Buddha causes passion in all of us." The monk asks, "How do we get rid of it?" And Chao Cho answers, "Why should we get rid of it?" In Opening to Oneness, it says that anger is a natural human emotion, and it lasts about 5 seconds. So the issue is when it becomes a sustained version of anger, when we carry that along with us, and then it starts to cause problems in the form of suffering for ourselves, suffering for others, unskillful action, sort of those corrosive, sort of long-lasting anger. We can discuss that a little bit as we go forward as well. But the point is, and this is as well as all the other precepts, it's not about trying to stuff the anger inside and suppress it and disguise it, but just sort of becoming more familiar with it as a natural part of our human existence. And Reb Anderson's Being Upright, he has a quote from the Definitive Vinaya. From Sutra 24 of the Maharatnakuta Sutra. Now it's a dialogue between Upali and Buddha. So I think this kind of illustrates the importance of having of working with this precept. And he says, Upali asked Buddha, suppose a bodhisattva breaks a precept out of desire, another does so out of hatred, and another does so out of ignorance. World-honored one, which of these offenses is the most serious? The world-honored one answered Upali, if a bodhisattva continues to break precepts out of desire for kalpas as numerous as the sands of the Ganges, his offense is still minor. If a bodhisattva breaks a precept out of hatred, even just once, his offense is very serious. Why? Because a bodhisattva who breaks precepts out of desire still holds sentient beings in his embrace, whereas a bodhisattva who breaks precepts out of hatred forsakes sentient beings altogether. Upali, a bodhisattva should not be afraid of the passions which can help him hold sentient beings in his embrace, but he should fear the passions which can cause him to forsake sentient beings. And then he goes on to say, Upali, if a bodhisattva is not thoroughly conversant with Vinaya, he will be afraid when he transgresses out of desire, but he will not be afraid when he transgresses out of hatred. But if a bodhisattva is thoroughly conversant with Vinaya, he will not be afraid when he transgresses out of desire, but will be afraid when he transgresses out of hatred. And so I think that sort of just illustrates. A lot of the other precepts, if we have desire for things, if we have desires, and then break a precept out of out of a sort of a positive desire of wanting to get something, of wanting certain things. Obviously, we don't want to break precepts, and we don't want to live at like in accordance, out of accordance with the precepts. But I think the lesson is that anger should be a pretty clear signal. It should be a pretty clear flag that we should take very, very seriously. Because if we act out of anger, act out of hatred, then we're not able to hold other sentient beings in our embrace as we act out of that hatred. That being said, in The Mind of Clover, Robert Aiken says that this precept isn't a moral injunction. Just like all the other precepts aren't moral injunctions, it's not an external thing that we should use as, a club to beat ourselves over the head with, or, say we're bad or sinful because we have broken a precept. I think the precepts are formulated more as descriptions of an enlightened action, more so than prescriptions of behavior that we're not allowed to do or not supposed to do. So the idea is that anger and love are names for certain tendencies of energy. So if you can't feel anger at all, then you're not in touch with a certain aspect of your being, of a certain aspect of your creativity, and it's something that would need addressing. And we can get into that a little bit later as well. So, just out of curiosity, I don't know that I think anger is one of those things that we sort of we all know what it is. We have an idea of what it is. I was just curious how what a definition would be. So I guess the dictionary definition that I got was a strong feeling of annoyance, displeasure, or hostility, which I thought was fairly interesting, because I think it sort of suggests that anger is, I mean, really sort of made up of potentially other kind of emotions just existing on a spectrum. Maybe it's a matter of degree, maybe it's a matter of, how long we hold on to it, how we approach it, how we relate to it. Like an annoyance at any number of things, like dropping something when you are in a hurry to leave the house. You have to go back and get your keys. Could be on the scale or on the spectrum of anger, or it could be very much in the spectrum of anger if that causes us to lash out at loved ones or, really just take that very seriously. Same thing with, displeasure or hostility. We might have our, disagreements with somebody, but sort of taking that very seriously might push it into the realm of anger. But I think ultimately, the roots are pretty similar. So there are different sort of formulations of the way this precept is written in different traditions and different translations, and the way that Cassie read it earlier in our Kyoju Kaimon, it's do not indulge anger, cultivate equanimity. In the realm of the selfless Dharma, not contriving reality for the self is the precept of not indulging anger. Not advancing, not retreating, not real, not empty. There is a brilliant sea of clouds. There is a dignified sea of clouds. And then Bodhidharma's formulation, self nature is inconceivably wondrous. And the Dharma of no self, not postulating self, is called the precept of refraining from anger. And again, just because I was curious what postulating means, it is to claim or assume the existence or truth of, especially as a basis for reasoning or arguing, to assume without proof or as self-evident, no pun intended, take for granted. So the idea of postulating self, the idea of really sort of assuming that there's this inherent self-enduring self, And operating from that sort of assumption is really sort of the root at what this precept is trying to get to. So John Dido Laurie says, actualize harmony, do not be angry. It's pretty straightforward. And Reb Anderson talks about how in his tradition, the translation is typically a disciple of Buddha does not harbor ill will. But then he talks about how he went on to do some other translating and said maybe a more accurate translation was a disciple of Buddha does not become angry. So there's a little bit of a disparity between the idea of, well, is it just not becoming angry? Is it not harboring ill will? Is it not postulating self? And he goes on to say that this idea of giving up all anger or even just all inappropriate anger seems like a very lofty goal that maybe it seems maybe unattainable at first glance. But he says that like maybe thinking that it's unattainable might be the same as saying that, maybe we're not capable of attaining Buddhahood or attaining enlightenment, which I think he would disagree with. So how do we reconcile that with some of the other formulations that are out there? That's one of the questions that is something to sit with as we sort of go through the precept and sort of explore it a little bit. In the Waking Up to What You Do, from Diane Rosetto that we studied last year, it's I take up the way of letting go of anger. So again, this idea of not harboring ill will, letting go. And there was a quote in her book that I thought was just beautiful, from a student of hers. They said, anger no longer seems a lunatic stranger locked in the basement, but a familiar, shadowy twin who suddenly appears in the room in unexpected guises. I now recognize anger as a frequent visitor in my life. So in Opening to Oneness, it talks a lot about how anger is a very useful tool for working with the precepts. I think it's a very helpful vehicle for just exploring the meaning of the precepts, not just in terms of anger, but maybe as a template for working with some of the other precepts, just because anger is it's one of these things that when it happens, usually we're pretty aware of it. Usually others around us may be pretty aware of it. It's probably, at least I experience it pretty often and fairly strongly. And just full disclosure, when I told my wife that I was going to be talking about this precept, she thought it was absolutely hilarious. So I don't know if that makes me especially qualified to talk about it, or especially underqualified to talk about it, or neither. But she just thought that was really funny. So I did kind of specifically seek out talking about this precept because I wanted a chance to explore it a lot more deeply and really just study it and see what the different approaches are for working with anger. So it can take a lot of different forms. Like I said, I think the roots are hostility, annoyance, displeasure, any number of different sort of other emotions. It can be, violent and eruptive, or it can be sort of slow and simmering. And the idea, I think the practice in the book is to really take some time to explore all the different subtle variations and all the different ways that it manifests for us personally, so we can find out what works for each of us in practice. So each of us probably reacts very differently to different types of stimuli that make us angry. We can suppress it, just pretend that it's not there, disregard it, ignore it, act it out. Disguise it as something else. And so in the book, she presents different questions for working with our anger. What kind of anger is it? What is its flavor? Is it a hot angry? Is it a cold angry? Is it like, when do I get angry? Is it, do I notice that it happens particularly when I'm tired, when I'm hungry, when I'm defensive, when I'm feeling vulnerable? All those things are really helpful questions to ask in sort of exploring our own anger. Some of the other stuff that she mentions, do I get angry when I drop stuff? Do I get angry when others drop stuff? Am I more angry with myself? Am I more angry with other people when I'm being criticized or ignored? Do I get more angry at someone else being treated badly than when I'm getting treated badly? I think the road rage example is something that she mentions. Just being curious about any reactions or actions that we take out of anger. Is it angry language? Is it angry actions? And she really drives home the point that it's important to be curious and precise with our sort of exploration of what it looks like. So not to treat it as like a generic sort of abstract, like, oh yeah, I know what anger is. I know, yeah, I have this cartoon version of what I think my anger looks like or feels like. But I think her point is that's not really exploring our own anger. It's kind of a way of distancing ourselves from it, by sort of caricature, making it a caricature, or sort of keeping it at a distance. So I think in a lot of cases, but not necessarily all cases, there's a cause of the anger, there's a stimulus, and then there's an object of the anger. And we might not necessarily be aware of what either or both of those are. Maybe sometimes the cause is we think it's because somebody cut us off in traffic, but really it might be because there's a sense of weakness that we're trying to mask, and we have to, act it out on the road or something like that. Sometimes I think in there's an example of sometimes you can just wake up on the wrong side of the bed, just sort of feeling angry, with no clear cause, maybe no clear object. And it's important to explore that and just sort of sit with it and not try to push it away by just breathing with it and being patient with it. One of the things I think that is she mentions as key in this exploration is being curious about it, not having any judgments about it, not creating narratives around it, but treating it with compassion and just allowing it to be there without, either immediately acting out of anger or immediately trying to push it away or suppress it or disguise it as something else. And I think one of the things that we had been discussing in the guided practice group, talking about the six paramitas, typically, or I guess traditionally in a lot of cultures where Buddhism is practiced, is that the paramita of generosity is practiced before you get to practicing ethics. So I think by practicing generosity, it sort of provides a useful framework for this context of exploration, where if we're going to be exploring our own anger, to treat it with a sense of generosity, to treat it with a sense of, I'm not going to be stingy with myself when I maybe don't live up to a certain expectation I might have had. I'm going to be generous with my patience in terms of maybe I feel like I'm making a lot of mistakes by acting out of anger, or maybe I'm frustrated because I have this expectation that I'm, being angry more than I thought I should be. But I think it's important to treat it with compassion, with generosity, and that helps us to relate to other people with the same generosity and compassion when maybe they're acting out of anger as well. So we don't sort of create a feedback loop with anger and other people. So I think there's probably have a good bit more, but I was thinking about I don't want this to just be kind of a lecture. I wanted to have people have a chance to discuss some stuff as well. I do have sort of a prompt for breakout rooms, but before that, does anybody have any comments or questions or anything on anything that I've mentioned so far? Okay. So would we be able to do breakout rooms for maybe like 8 to 10 minutes? Cool. So for breakout rooms, just wanted to sort of explore this idea of anger being a teacher, or anger being a signal, and was just curious, maybe if anybody has specifically noticed, or ways that you've noticed in your own practice that you have come to some sort of realization through anger, whether that's, wow, I'm always getting angry with my mom. Maybe I have some unresolved trauma there, or some unresolved issues that we need to have a constructive conversation about. Or, wow, I'm always getting angry at this thing. Maybe I have a particular attachment to this thing that I had never noticed before. Is that clear enough? Does anybody have any questions about the prompt? So what, basically, what ways?
I just tried to throw something together while you were talking there. I'm not sure if that works for you, Josh.
Works for me. And then we can come back and maybe share a little bit and discuss. So hopefully the prompt is okay. Does anybody have anything from their group that they want to talk about or share, or
I will from our group of and I was in a group with Candy and Josh, and if I screw any of this up, you guys jump in and correct me. But it was really interesting to have a conversation about the safety of different the difference in the safety or the safeness of expressing anger in our society based on who we are or where we come from or privilege or our gender or our race or ethnicity. And it was just an interesting conversation that I hadn't that was it was slightly different, I think, than what I expected the conversation to be. And it was really enlightening for me. It was educational for me, and I really appreciated the conversation. So thanks to both of the folks in the group for that. So maybe y'all can think about that too, about who can express anger in our society and who it's not safe for to do so. So anyway, thanks for that, everybody.
Thanks, Betty. Anybody else? Is it Yuli?
Yeah. So I'm not necessarily going to say anything about our group, but I'll piggyback on what Betty was saying about who is safe expressing anger. I just read here in Oregon, there was a cardiologist that was awarded $4 million from OHSU for a lawsuit she filed. And I know the story behind it, and I didn't know she had sued. So she She left the cardiology program, and that program disbanded at OHSU. And part of the problem was there was a lot of sexism and patriarchy, and she was paid less. And it was very widely known that she was paid less as a woman. But the things that she would speak up about and get angry about, which included patient care, very important issues. She was, because she was a woman, she was judged on her anger. And so, where the men in her group got very, very angry and inappropriately so, she was fired because of the anger that she expressed over very important issues that were happening at the hospital. So I think that's a really interesting point that you brought up, Betty, because I didn't really think about it that way. Because yeah, I mean, some people, their anger is viewed differently by different people and inappropriate or appropriate. So I think that was very fascinating. So yeah, thank you for mentioning that, because it's happening all the time. So anyways, thanks.
Thanks, Yuli. So I think that actually segues really kind of smoothly into one of the things I was going to mention sort of next. You mentioned the sort of inappropriate versus appropriate. And I think there's a distinction that kind of I think we maybe can sort of naturally draw, but also I think is worth exploring as well between this idea of like inappropriate versus appropriate anger, and like an inappropriate use of this anger energy versus an appropriate use of this anger energy. And I think that's one of the tough parts about working with this precept. I think in the opening to oneness, towards at some point in the chapter, there's a quote from Aristotle that only if someone doesn't get angry and adjust in a situation where the circumstances either require it or it's necessary, then it's an inappropriate reaction. So I think the there's a section in Being Upright that Brev Anderson talks about how we come to understand the difference between this appropriate anger and inappropriate anger. And it's a little abstract, but bear with me. So his answer to how we distinguish between these two types of anger is by accepting the teaching of all Buddhas, which is the teaching of the entire universe, which is to refrain from evil, practice all good, and benefit all beings. So the three pure precepts. So without this commitment, he says, we'll be confused and able to wisely discriminate between appropriate and inappropriate actions. So I think like discussing the three pure precepts and sort of viewing them as a lens from which to view the appropriate actions from the other precepts and sort of put everything into context from situation to situation. That anger isn't necessarily inappropriate in and of itself. And there's some examples like anger at injustice doesn't necessarily violate this precept. Anger at cruelty, anger at stuff like that. Yes, Candy.
I think for me, the thing is that anger becomes inappropriate as soon as you indulge in it. And I could be wrong because I'm new to this whole thing. I'm new to Buddhism. I'm new to the precepts. I'm new to everything. I don't know anything. I'm just trying to process all this along with everything else I have. But when I think about what you said, refrain from evil, practice all good, and love all beings. Am I getting it right? Did I say the three things right? Can somebody help me? Oh my God. But I think about how, like, allowing yourself to have that anger, well, not allowing because it happens, that 5 second emotion and recognizing, okay, this is anger. It is natural. I just had it. And then turning it into fuel to then act in love is the only appropriate use, the only efficient use, the only safe use of anger. And I think that some people, by virtue of their privilege in society, learn this lesson faster than others. I use that as an inverse, actually, because I am actually somewhat privileged in that I have had to learn this lesson faster than some other people who do not have the same gender or skin color as myself. I've had to learn very quickly that, okay, that made me mad. And going forward, I need to do something about it so I don't get mad again. But the way I'm going to do something is not to be a firebrand. The way I'm going to do it is in love. And from now on, doing all these three things. So, and I that's to me the def that's what I'm understanding with regards to appropriate and inappropriate is that you can't sustain the emotion, even if you're sustaining it in the name of fighting injustice. Well, you're still going to be inefficient because you're fighting it angrily. It's not going to work unless you fight it with love, unless you fight it the way MLK did. Like, okay, we're going to sit down and have love. I'm just saying, that's just the way I'm understanding this. And I could be so wrong, guys. Please help me out, y'all.
No, I don't think that's don't think that's wrong at all. I think that sort of goes to the heart of what tends to make stuff to make anger inappropriate or appropriate. Yes, Denny.
Well, we talked about something similar to this in our group. And that if anger runs away with you, because we all know how it feels when anger just gets in your gut, your whole body just clenches up, your heart races, your mind races, and you're just in total uncontrol. And that it seems like the key to being able to react or act out of love or to settle yourself is awareness. It's just taking a step back and asking yourself, okay, what is this? Where is it coming from? And one thing we did in our group was to read this quote from Thich Nhat Hanh in the book, which I'll just speak for myself. I thought this was just, I don't usually spend a whole lot of time thinking about. Thinking too deeply when I read Thich Nhat Hanh, that's just my own personal reaction, but I love this because this is all about how you should relate to your anger. Treat your anger with the utmost respect and tenderness, for it is no other than yourself. Do not suppress it, simply be aware of it. Awareness is like the sun. When it shines on things, they are transformed. When you are aware that you are angry, your anger is transformed. If you destroy anger, you destroy the Buddha, for Buddha and Mara are of the same essence. Mindfully dealing with anger is like taking the hand of a little brother. And I just love that.
Thank you, Denny. Betty?
Thanks, Denny. That's beautiful. Can I share a quote as well?
Sure.
This is from David White. He's a poet. You guys probably know who he is anyway. He's really brilliant. The quote is, anger is the deepest form of compassion for another, for the world, for the self, for a life, for the body, for a family, and for all our ideals, all vulnerable and all possibly about to be hurt. stripped of physical imprisonment and violent reaction. Anger is the purest form of care. The internal flame of anger always illuminates what we belong to, what we wish to protect, and what we're willing to hazard ourselves for. And I just think that's just brilliant reflection from him. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Betty. Is it Leah in the church window?
Yeah. So yeah, this came up in our group too, that a couple of us shared our stories of anger, and they actually were kind of borderline, like maybe they were just assertion in the moment instead. And the difference between anger and assertion, like in a positive way, is Coral mentioned the sacred pause term coined by Tara Brach. And I like to think of it as the space. And basically what I'm referring to is, like you were saying, it's that moment where before you react, there's a little time where, and it can be just the tiniest bit of time, but you just become aware, like you were saying, of this is what I'm feeling, like, and acknowledge this is what I'm feeling. And I like the way you put it, Candy, like now that you know, and you've seen it in yourself that I am feeling anger, and then you can transform it and it becomes something else. Like, and I actually think I have a theory that anger isn't a real thing anyway. It's just an illusion. Like in the moment, it's just a reaction. But there's something underneath it almost always. It's hard to find what pure anger actually is. You sort of ask why, and there's a reason underneath why anger is in the moment. So that's kind of my thing. But yeah, if you have a space or a little bit of time there, and that is due to practice, at least for me and for those in our group, that gives us that ability.
Thank you. Yeah, I think yeah, I think a lot of the discussion sort of goes back to that, the idea of sort of anger and love sort of being kind of energy, but like anger is because when that energy gets wrapped up in this idea of self, of like having a self to protect and acting from this point of postulating a self, of assuming that there's a self. But I think, yeah, I think that the idea of working with anger skillfully is really that idea of like transmutating it to enact, you know, consciously out of love, you know, more of a positive energy. And using that as a teacher to help us practice that kind of more consistently and kind of explore yeah, just everything else about the practice. Does anyone? Oh, Rachel.
I think it's interesting that my group, well, two of us have different ideas of anger because we're both very sensory type, like overstimulated. When we get overstimulated and we're trying to, or at least I'm trying to understand where people are coming from and stuff, it's like almost like the refusal of communication starts to like hurt. Because I have auditory processing disorder. So what that means is like English is like a foreign language to me. So when I'm trying to understand what someone's coming from, and I also have background noise to deal with, and I'm also trying to understand where they're what they're trying to do, and there is that communication barrier, it can get very frustrating and very hard, especially when you can't read the emotions or in between the lines too, and that can just build up and build up and build up until it becomes a meltdown of sorts of frustration and just anger at yourself because you can't understand because your brain is not working, not at the other person because they're trying their hardest and they're not sure why you're not understanding anything either. And it's hard when sometimes I think anger is also the inability to communicate properly, regardless, because we think we're talking to each other, we think we know what we're saying, but sometimes I kind of wonder if we do, or if we're just nodding along and saying yeah, and then going to another person, going, I don't know what they just said.
Thank you. I think we might be right at about time. Does anybody have any last thoughts? Right. Well, thank you everyone for being here and for participating. Try to close this out. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that all may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Thank you so much for the talk, Josh.